Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's Daily Coast Brief. It's our weekly show about politics. I am Marcos Melitzis. I am here with Carrie Alleveld. And today we're going to be talking about the freakout. Carrie, everybody's freaking out.
Yeah. I mean, what's a presidential election without a freakout? Come on.
What's a Democratic Party without a freakout? This is what we do. And of course, everybody's freaking out about Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Donald Trump is legitimately scary. I'm not saying don't be afraid. I'm fucking terrified. But the catalyst for this conversation is a story in Politico on Tuesday, May 28th, titled Dems in Full-Blown Freakout Over Biden. And it just goes through the typical people freaking out because polls this, polls that, polls in battleground states. The fact that Donald Trump outraced Joe Biden in April has people freaking out as well. I don't know why that's shocking because he was in a contested primary. People were sitting it out. People have been donating to Biden for a while. Biden has, what, $80 million lead on fundraising overall, something like that.
So, yeah, I mean, just to be really clear about that, the Biden campaign is way ahead in terms of its war chest. So it's not to say, oh, well, you know, there's no chance of Trump catching up or raising money. It's just that right now that there's still just an incredible gap there, a yawning gap.
So this is the lead of the story. I'm going to read this. Quote, a pervasive sense of fear has settled in at the highest levels of the Democratic Party over President Joe Biden's reelection prospects, even among office holders and strategists who had previously expressed confidence about the coming battle with Trump. So I think it's a pretty solid, sound theory about why Democrats freak out and Republicans always project confidence. So do you want to hear it?
Yeah, give it to me. Give me your best stuff, Marcos.
So my theory is that what happens if Democrats win? The stock market does well. The economy does better. Deficits usually come down. Nobody's rights get taken away. In fact, they get expanded. There's more government spending. And okay, people may cry about things like government programs that benefit the poor or whatever, but it usually doesn't affect them. It does not. Democratic policies don't affect individuals, except maybe if you're a high-earning billionaire and they somehow managed to pass a billionaire's tax, which is almost never, right? So, I mean, they're usually okay regardless. But what happens when a Republican wins, right? People are directly impacted. The economy just inherently goes south. Like, I mean, this is statistical. This is not spin or anything. The economy does better. More jobs are created under Democratic administrations by a long shot over Republican ones. So the economy goes bad. In lots of cases, wars get started. You have rights are taken away. You have government programs like the child tax credit get taken away. So there is a lot at stake as an individual when a Republican wins compared to when a Democrat wins. We have a lot more writing on this election than they do. They have to make up stuff. They literally have to make up stuff to freak out about. Oh, Dr. Seuss and oh, Taylor Swift said something. Like they
their latest total fabrication was the idea that there was an assassination attempt against Trump during the FBI executed a search warrant at Mar-a-Lago. Like that was a total fabrication, and Fox and, you know, Republican politicians and right-wing outlets all ran with that.
And compare that to Donald Trump literally saying that a president can assassinate his political opponents and have immunity, legal immunity. So again, these guys are projecting. It's their fantasies. And so there's a lot more at stake. So I don't begrudge people from being nervous, from being anxious, from worrying about the election results. To be very clear, Donald Trump may very well win. It is within the realm of possibility. And it is an indictment in our country, on our country, that so many people still support Donald Trump, despite the long catalog list of negatives, his sexual harassment, his, you know, attempt to destroy, subvert democracy, just policy-wise, the stuff he pushed, the locking up children at the border in cages, like the whole litany. And you look at that, telling people, you know, maybe we should drink Clorox during COVID times. Like, he is a freaking idiot. But he has that superpower, that ability to tap into that conservative lizard brain. And he just, he activates it in a way that few others do. Now, there's nobody else like him. He is a unique figure right now in American politics. And I don't think there's anybody behind him. If he goes down, we defeat him. We defeat MAGA, because there's nobody that can take that mantle. Trump is very unique in that way.
He is very unique in that way. You know, I would just call like the Democratic freak out down to this. If Trump wins, it may not be just a 4-year thing. It's a lifetime thing, right? Exactly. Yes. And so that's different, right? I mean, if Biden wins, okay, well, the country weathers 4 more years of him. And as you laid out, actually probably does quite well. The only people who don't win quite as much in a Biden presidency probably are big corporations and maybe some billionaires, right?
Except the stock market's at an all-time high. So even they right. do better. I mean, this is even, the nuttiness of this whole situation.
Right. Even they do better. But you know what Trump is promising, of course, is yeah. to extend his $2 trillion tax cut, which will benefit the wealthy and wealthy corporations more than anyone. So, I mean, you know, but just to, you know, go make it more clear, put an exclamation point on what I'm saying. If Biden wins, you know, they weather 4 years of that. And maybe they don't have access, you know, maybe the Saudis don't have access to the White yeah. House. Yeah. Like, the Saudis turn out to be big losers in the Biden yeah. administration. So they have a lot at stake. So does Putin, by the way. I mean, so, you know, a lot of these regimes do. But what Democrats have to lose is potentially our entire democracy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And even under a Biden administration for 4 years, the red states still get to run roughshod over freedoms, all the freedoms that they want, unless, you know, Democrats have enough congressional votes to do something like codify Roe v. Wade and protect abortion access. So, you know, these red state governors and state legislatures are still doing their thing, restricting abortion access to practically mm-hmm. nothing, right? 6-week mm-hmm. bans, maybe 12-week bans, you know, or no access whatsoever, restricting IVF, restricting monitoring women if they want to, you know, whatever. Like I do think the Biden DOJ, a reasonable DOJ would challenge that. But in any case, you know, they get to the red states continue to do what they want, you know, not regulate guns in any sort of way, real way, you know, that type of thing. So like, there's just so much more to lose. I mean, I was listening, this is a little bit off topic, but I'll go ahead and just go there real quick. I was listening to On the Wilderness, which is a podcast by Jon Favreau, Crooked Media, Pod Save America guy, right? And they were talking to Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller, two Republican, former Republican strategists, about how to engage Trump voters who were souring on him but didn't want to vote for Joe Biden. Mm. And the main thing, and we have to remember this, is that Trump hasn't faced an election yet since January 6th happened. Now, it seems like ancient history to us because it happened just after the last election, right? Just before Joe Biden was inaugurated. And Tim Miller said his opening question to engage people who are like, I don't know, Trump or Biden, you know, I can't stand Trump, but I don't like Biden either. And I can't imagine voting for a Democrat. His first question to them, to engage them, is, what do you think the chances are that Donald Trump doesn't leave office? And just let them say, what do they say? I mean, if they say, he was like, if they say 5%, okay, well, 5% is too risky. He already did the coup. He already did the insurrection on January 6th. And, you know, any of those voters who are reality-based enough to have been, to not believe that Joe Biden stole the election, which he did not, of course, but if they don't believe that and they're reality-based enough, they're pretty pissed off about January 6th and think it was a incredibly low moment in our history. So 5% is too much because Biden poses no chance of not leaving office after 4 years. That's how I got there. I went on a tangent, but that's how I got there.
No, this is so the stakes are absolutely enormous. And so, I mean, the point still stands, right? Like, what is more terrifying than our democracy? And if you even think 5% chance that he actually refuses to leave office at the end of his term after he's purged the Justice Department, the Pentagon, the Homeland Security, and he has the apparatus behind him, what's to force him? He's got the Supreme Court that'll rubber stamp. And I mean, even if the Supreme Court disagreed, what, they don't have an army. I mean, this is the famous thing about the Supreme Court. Its rules are in decisions are only followed out of deference, constitutional deference. There is no actual enforcement mechanism to make that happen. So it presents a absolutely terrifying situation. But to act like the possibility of Trump winning is somehow a likelihood leading to a freak out, quote, the word freak out, to me is dramatically overblown. I would rather be Joe Biden. I would still rather be Joe Biden. And we've talked about this in past podcasts and on Daily Coast, but it bears repeating because I think people really need to have a clear understanding of the current state of play. And Carrie, you've been writing a lot about this, so I'm gonna let you sort of begin to lay that foundation. And again, I just want to caveat, that doesn't mean it's not the opposite. It's not, we got this. I'm not saying we got this. Just like I'm not saying, you know, just like we're saying these people are ridiculous for freaking out, it would also be ridiculous to say, like, we got this. But
right.
It's a competitive election, yeah. And I like our chances. So, Carrie, I know, you know, you've been on this. This is your beat
right.
lately. So.
Well, I mean, I could take this a lot of different directions. I will just say that what I like about Joe Biden's chances at this moment, along with many, many things. First of all, he's on the right side of history. Second of all, the structural advantages are real, right? Joe Biden is running a real campaign. He's got real campaign offices in real swing states. He's got a real field operation. He's got, you know, a real strategy. He's got, I think, you know, I mean, like last month, for instance, I think he ran 9 times as many advertising dollars, like ads, and he made his ad buy was 9 times what Trump's was last month. Sorry, I stumbled for the right way to say it. But this is a real campaign. They're sending him to swing states. He's, you know, he's talking to voters. They've got a campaign strategy. They backed Trump into the conditions for two debates.
Before we get to the debate stuff, because that in itself is a nice bullet point that I definitely want to talk about. The flip side is that the Trump campaign has no field operation.
I'm going to go there. I promise.
Oh, you are going to get. Oh, yeah. So let's save the debate. Let's save the debate 100%. Bullet point. Let's focus on field because it matters.
Yeah, because it matters, right? So the point is that there's an actual apparatus and what I wrote a piece, and you can look it up. If you Google Daily Coast and you Google Trump's not preparing to win, he's preparing to lose. This goes to exactly what Marcos is about to say. And I'll let him illuminate that just a little bit further in more detail in a second. But Donald Trump has no field operation. He is telling
field operation.
No field operation. And we'll get back to that in a second, right? He is telling the Republican National Committee not to worry about a field operation, but instead to focus on quote unquote the cheating, right? Focus on getting a bunch of volunteers to monitor the election counting in all these different swing states. That's what hits the emphasis he wants. He is, most of his money right now that he's fundraising is going towards his legal expenses. It's not going towards making big ad buys or, you know, a field operation or anything like that. So he's actually, if you look at what he's doing, and he's continuing to sow distrust in mail-in voting. Now, there are some meager attempts, right, for the Republican Party, because they know, but you know, Republicans who really want to win are like, this is a disaster for us. We need the early votes. We need to bank them. But even though they've got him doing, like, every once in a while, someone's posting on his account, on his Truth Social account, like, you need to do early mail-in voting and stuff like that, you know, like, for the most part, he is completely sowing distrust in the mechanism, right? So what he wants, and he and all of his operatives at this point are saying, well, we're not going to, you know, when they get asked if Trump loses, are you going to accept the results? They're saying, well, no, you know, not if it's unfair. Yeah. And, not if you know, we'll have cheating. To see.
And right, it's surrogates, all of them are saying, right. And all these elected Republicans say the same thing. If there's no cheating.
Right.
There hasn't been.
He is absolutely laying the groundwork for, it's like for him, he's like, well, it's kind of a toss up in the polls right now. I might win. But my real attempt here is that is basically all my energy is in an insurance policy for losing. Okay. Tell us about field operations, Marcos.
So it's, I know this is sort of esoteric behind the scenes. It's not very glamorous. Not a lot of people see it. It's not a television ad, but field operation, a good field operation is there's been studies about this. This is a real number. It's worth 3 to 5 points because you're registering people to vote. Then you have a list of all the people, you know, whatever if you're a precinct captain, you have a list of all the people that are Democrats in your area. And you start making sure they got to the polls, right? So you're calling them before, did you vote? Before, it used to be like getting them to the polls on election day. Well, now with early voting, it's actually spread out over weeks or maybe even a month, where you're just basically checking up on people, making sure they have a ride to the polls if they don't have a ride to the polls, making sure they don't forget, making sure you answer any questions they may have. It is intensive, like time intensive. It is people intensive. And it doesn't scale very easily, which means one person can't be talking to 10,000 voters, right? You need to build people. So you're building this operation. And so you have field offices that are doing this from registering people to vote until the registration deadline to then turning to making sure they're informed and then getting them out to vote. It can be worth 3 to 5 points. So if you're looking at the polls and you're seeing that it's tied or Donald Trump is 1 or 2 points ahead in the battleground states, that field operation is worth 3 to 5 points. Now, it could also mean that the Trump campaign builds a field operation and it negates that, right? So you can have two great field operations balancing each other out, except that in this case, there isn't a field operation balancing out. There isn't a field operation designed to, again, identify those Republican-leaning Trump voters, which polling now suggests that the vast majority of non-voters are actually Trump-leaning. CNN.
There's lots of evidence that the people who are less likely to vote are leaning Trump and giving him the advantage in a lot of these polls.
That means that a field operation is even more important to Donald Trump. And I think a lot of it is because the Democrats in general, we know what's at stake. Our democracy, our rights are at stake, right? So it's going to take a lot less effort to make sure to get these, you know, non-respondent voters to the polls. For the Republicans, it's a bunch of edgelords, Elon Musk fans, Trump supporters who aren't registered to vote, wouldn't know how to register to vote. It's just they're anti-institutions. They don't trust institutions. And voting is inherently is going, what, to a DMV or going to a government website to give your information to vote. So yeah, you need that field operation even more to make sure that they're registered, first of all, and second of all, that they actually know what to do and turn out to vote. And even Donald Trump saying mail-in voting, it's fraud. You know, you can have a field operation saying like, no, you know, mail it in. It's okay. Yeah, it's get it in. Like,
but they're still fighting that. They don't, if you ask all the time in these focus groups, people are, you know, Republican voters, you hear them say things like, I just don't trust it. I'm going to vote on the day of. Well, you never know what's going to happen on the day of. You never know whether you're going to get to the poll.
And again, field becomes that critically important too, because if it's raining and it's miserable and people are like, screw it. You need somebody to call and say like, no, you got to come out to the polls. So that is the importance of field, 3 to 5 points. And again, a good field operation, if it's 3 to 5 points, and a bad field operation, 1 to 2 points, you know, you still got a little bit of an edge. Field matters. But when you have a Trump operation that has not opened a field office in any of the battleground states, the last time I checked, they still had not opened because it costs money and the money's going to lawyer fees. It creates a major advantage for Biden campaign. All right, moving on.
It's unreal. Yeah, I'll just let me just say, I remember a couple quotes. In Arizona, there was one Republican operative saying, there are no signs of life to Donald Trump's organization, the RNC, the Republican organization there in terms of the presidential. In Georgia, Brian Kemp, the governor there, one of his top aides said, you know, you need a very sophisticated field operation in order to turn out Georgia for you, because it's not a monolithic group of people at all, the demography. And he said, they don't have anyone full time here. They have a consultant.
Oh, good. Consultant. Good. The consultant will consult on how to turn out, what, 4 million Georgia Republicans? That's a, right. Okay, good. Let's encourage them. Yeah, great idea. That's all you need. You're good.
Send a few consultants. This is why I say, like, the, you know, what he's building is he's sowing distrust. He's building this insurance policy so that if he loses, he gets to claim that it's rigged. He can claim, you know, he can hopefully in his mind stoke months of chaos, and even better in his mind, weeks of extreme chaos. Right. This is what he's banking on is if he loses. And there, you know, it's a toss up right now in the battlegrounds, basically.
It absolutely is a toss up. Okay, so we got that. I would say that Trump's actions do not sound like somebody who is comfortable about his place in the polls, whether that is attacking RFK, Robert Kennedy Jr.'s third party candidacy, his agreeing to debates. And I want you to talk a little bit about the debates, because that's actually, it's a big deal, the debate thing. But also going to the Libertarian Party conference this past weekend, knowing that libertarians are not big fans of Donald Trump. And I don't know whose idea it was to sending them this, but if you had any chance to, you know, Google Libertarian Party Donald Trump, and you're going to see people, imagine Daily Kos liberals in a room and Donald Trump walks in, the reaction, that was the reaction of the libertarians. I've never felt more kinship with a libertarian in my entire life. We may not agree on much else, but on Donald Trump, like, it was vicious. People were booing and hissing and yelling at him. And he got all testy. He was like, well, if you want to lose and you want to get 3% and keep doing what you're doing. Like, he lost his composure up there because he's not used to being challenged like that to his face. And
it makes me want to look it up. I heard some of it quoted on like a podcast or maybe NPR.
Oh my God,
or something.
Look at it. It's hilarious. So fun. Like, I really
you never
like
see him go somewhere. You never see him go somewhere where he gets booed. Never, never does he go anywhere where he gets booed. I'm sure he didn't anticipate it. Honestly, had to have taken it by surprise.
No, and there's a way for him, if he had anticipated it, there was a way to message that and maybe try to turn the crowd around, and he started attacking them. Like, he got snippy and angry at them, so he was not prepared. Or if he was prepared, he lost it, because, you know, it's Donald Trump. He doesn't prepare.
It's always a good look to shout down voters and tell them they're stupid.
Yeah, basically. But it shows that he knows that, I mean, he got 46% of the vote twice. He hasn't grown his support since then. In fact, it's probably shrunk a little bit. So with third party candidates, he doesn't need to get to 50. But our third party candidates, you know, let's say if Biden gets 45, he gets 46. Our third party candidate is going to get 9%. Historically, that doesn't happen. I don't see that happening this time as well. And even RFK polling shows that, you know, at worst, it splits the vote in half. It probably hurts Donald Trump a little bit more.
I'm just going to caveat that some of the battleground state polling isn't quite as decisive about that. But I worry about it more for Biden than I do for Trump, even though some of the polls show that it's hurting Trump.
So that said, he is looking for additional votes. He needs to grow his base. He was doing rallies in I think it was the Bronx, trying to, you know, grow his support amongst Black voters and Latino voters. I mean, good luck. But I guess.
Slightly different take on that?
All right, go on.
Sorry.
Yeah, I would hear it.
Well, the slightly different take is that he wasn't actually trying to grow his vote. That he was setting up this idea that he's trying to get Black and Latino votes. Right? I mean, listen, he's doing better. So at least some polling shows that he's doing better among those voters. But I mean, I think that there is a sense of him wanting to like be able to say, well, I am, you know, reaching out to that community, et cetera. I mean, it's
supposed to reassure straying white suburban voters that are really feeling unsure about the racism and the sexism. But there's that piece. I think he's going out on a, he's going out trying to find new voters or expand it or at least grow that base, because he knows what he has now is not probably not enough to pull him over the top. He's got to get new votes from somewhere, absent a collapse in Biden's vote, which is, again, it's within the realm of possibility. But I think it's far less likely to happen. And then third, I still don't believe, and we've talked about this at length, people don't know, aren't as educated on abortion, on how Trump was the one who ended it. Trump has admitted now that he's going to come after contraception. And so there is a voter information piece that hasn't been activated yet. Yeah, Biden is advertising. People are not paying attention to the political campaign. And that's probably not going to really, really happen in earnest until Labor Day. That is historically when people finally start paying attention. The Democratic convention is at the end of August. So it's well primed to really kick that off. And that's when I'm going to be looking at the polling. And Carrie, I may be freaking out in September.
Yeah, right. Well, listen.
But not okay, now.
Well, not yet. And okay, so a couple things. Dan Pfeiffer, former White House communications director for Obama, always says, you know, worry about everything, panic about nothing. Okay.
Yeah,
so like we're trying to cover all the bases, but don't panic. We're doing the work, right? Another thing is, unfortunately, it's very plausible that those last minute undecided voters who at the last second swung against Hillary Clinton in 2016 may not make up their minds and until the final few weeks of the election. And they may not even admit that that swing may not even show up in the polling. So I was listening to Joe Trippi, and he was talking about the election where he was the campaign manager, I think, of Doug Jones's Senate campaign in Alabama. And he said successful, right? Successful Democratic campaign to win that seat. And he said that, like, you could see it starting to move. They would get these polls in, these tracking polls in at like 2 a.m. And in the final 2 weeks, you could see the undecided voters just deciding that Roy Moore, who was like basically, essentially a pedophile, right? Like he was just too gross, that even the Republican voters who had been voting their entire lives for Republicans were like, no, I just can't do this. I'm going to vote for Doug Jones, who is a good, decent human being. But that didn't start to show up until the final 2 or 3 weeks of the campaign. So I just want to prepare people that
there's
it's possible.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a time. But right now, the polls are essentially showing a tide race with not a lot of room for Trump to grow, a lot of room for Biden and the Democrats to grow. He's got the issues. He's got the organization. There is a lot that can go right here. Now, again, Trump in 2016, he had the cards stacked against him, and somehow everything fell in place. Any one of those things, like the Mueller report, you know, the email report coming out 3 days before the election, like any of those things could have not happened and Hillary would have won. So it takes, but again, we're in that place. And Trump could get lucky twice in a row. I don't think he will. But we'll know a lot more in September. So that's sort of the theme of today's show. And we're out of time, Carrie, but that's what I hope people take away. It's there's really no reason to freak out right now. There's reason to worry, and there's reason to work hard. Please, you know, this is a serious situation, but give us a few more months. And then we'll have a better idea where things really stand. And if we're doing the work that we're doing, and again, Biden has a field operation, they're cranking, they're getting people registered to vote. Biden is raising the money he needs to get the message out. The pieces are coming into place for a successful fall. So that's our part, is to help that machine do what it needs to do to prepare for that sprint at the end of the year. And now, Trump is in a courtroom and he's paying lawyer fees. Like, this is the state of the play.
And I'm writing a lot of pieces on messaging, things that you can say to your peers, because you are, anyone who's listening to us is a better messenger than any ad is that the Biden campaign can run. So if you want to see Trump lose, talk to your friends, talk to your neighbors, talk to your coworkers. And I'm doing different messaging that, you know, depending on who they are, what you might want to tell them. So go ahead and go to our site,
Carrie,
and check it out.
Yeah. Carrie Elleveld at Daily Kos. Definitely check that out. You are the most important messenger in the political space. Nobody around you trusts anybody in politics more than they trust you. And that's like a real thing. I'm not blowing hot air. It's called influencers, right? We all know about influencers. You are a political influencer if you're listening to the show, if you're reading Daily Kos. And so it's up to you. So thank you so much. That is our show for today. Thank you, Carrie, so much. Thanks for Walter for producing, Perry for helping behind the scenes. And thank you, the viewer, listener, reader, for being part of this movement to save our democracy from the forces of Donald Trump and his MAGA army. So thanks so much. We're going to be very, very busy in the next 6 months.
It's 5 months.
5 months. Yeah. Okay. So no, we got to work our asses off, guys. But no time to panic. Not yet. Not yet. Things are looking pretty good for us. Don't worry. Just do the work. Thank you so much. Love you all. Catch you all next week. Bye-bye.